This has been an interesting series. When I started this on Proverbs, it was going to be 8 sermons. I think this is 22. We have at least 8 to go, so it has expanded. And as we got into Proverbs on parenting, there's just a lot more here to say. So we're going to go a little bit out of Proverbs this morning, but I want to continue with that. I found some interesting quips regarding the family. You might like some of these. Ogden Nash said, "Family is a unit composed not only of children, but of men, women, and occasional animal, and the common cold." There have certainly been years that we thought the common cold was dominant in the family. Someone made the astute observation, "Having a big family around is a good way to make sure there will always be someone to answer the phone and forget the message." When it comes to extended family, one unknown person said this, "Every family tree always produces nuts." Well, some of you must have some of those in your family tree, too. Someone else quipped, "The best part of some family trees is underground." Ouch. Perhaps that's why a fellow named A. Misner said, "God gives us relatives. Thank God we can choose our friends." He may have had a sibling like the one described by the person who said, "My kid brother was sent from heaven. They must like it quiet up there." My younger brother was like that. Now, those are humorous, but the comment by a fellow named Peter DeVries is a little closer to what we've been preaching about in this series. He said, "Who of us is mature enough for offspring before the offspring themselves arrive? The value of marriage is not that adults produce children, but that children produce adults." It's an interesting way to put it. The responsibility that comes with children often does force adults to mature. I often said that part of the reason I got married is I wanted to understand the nature of God's love better, and I knew that you could not do that without learning to love somebody. But I have to say, probably on Diane's part and my part, it wasn't until we had children that we really began to get an inkling of what it meant of God's sacrificial love. Let's face it, what do infants give you? Dirty diapers, spit up crying, and an occasional smile. And yet the godly mother and the godly father will give up anything they have for the care of that child. They will sacrifice more for that child than they will for themselves. That's the nature of sacrificial love. And God's love is far beyond that. For Scripture tells us that He extended His love to us while we were yet sinners, at enmity with Him, when Christ died for us. Well, the responsibilities of having children generally do encourage adults to mature, at least it should. Tragically, not all adults do mature, and the children suffer for it. Now, our goal as Christian parents is to raise children that are going to be responsible adults and reflect a godly character. And you do that by following the principles that set forth in Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9, which we have mentioned quite a few times already in this series. You need to love God yourself with all your heart, soul, and strength, and then diligently teach your children about God, His character, His attributes, His nature, and His commandments, and all the things that are part of daily life. Or as that passage goes on to say, when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, all the situations of life. That is your responsibility before God. And I cannot emphasize enough the importance of you loving God first. Your children are going to learn a whole lot more by your example than what words you use. James Baldwin recognized this and said this, "Children have never been very good at listening to their elders. They have never failed to imitate them." That's a hard truth sometimes. Now, your example as a parent, then, is the most important to them, but those around you also have an influence. And that's why I stressed so strongly last week the importance of being involved in the body life of the church. Every parent needs mutual accountability and encouragement from other believers. That includes being humble enough to hear and consider criticism of yourself and your kids. Remember, the goal is to glorify our Creator. It's to become more like the Lord Jesus Christ. So don't let pride block your what should be there and make you wise in your own eyes. And pride will do that. And when you become wise in your own eyes, then you continue to walk in foolishness and sin. That's detrimental to you and your children. Now, the mutual ministry that is to occur within the local church then results in the whole body, as well as each person within it, maturing, becoming more like Christ. And so that applies to everybody here. So whether you have kids or not, the points in the sermon do apply. You have an effect on children and on families. So make sure you're having your own time with the Lord, you have personal Bible study, you have a personal prayer time, get involved with other believers, join a small group Bible study, join some kind of ministry. Awana's going to need a bunch of folks coming up here in a couple weeks. A lot of things are getting started here in September. Get involved with other believers. They need to know you well enough that they can hold you accountable, and you need to know well them enough that you can do the same for them. Know what's going on. Know how to encourage them. We all need that. Part of the reason we had the church picnic yesterday is that people get to know each other well enough to develop those kind of deeper relationships, as well as enjoy hamburgers and hot dogs and all the other stuff we did. And the Lord certainly did give us a beautiful day yesterday, so if you missed it, plan for it next year. We try and put it in the bulletin early enough so there won't be conflicts, but the Lord was very gracious yesterday, and we do praise Him for that. Now, there are many areas of responsibility that we have before God, and I've covered most of those areas that deal with the family, but there's one more, and then I want to expand off in some other areas. Remember, first responsibility you have as parents in your family is fulfilling your role as a husband or wife. That's your first responsibility in the family. You're the role model for your children in how to handle relationships. The second parental responsibility in the family is the first responsibility of children in the family, and that is that children are to obey their parents. And as we described that, that means the first time right away with a happy face. Children are in sin if they do not. That means if you're not teaching them to obey you, you're actually teaching them and encourage them to sin. So you have to be very serious about that. The third area of family responsibility is for children to honor their parents. That includes the actions, the attitudes of respect by both children and adults toward their parents. The obedience of young children is only part of that. Adults need to honor their parents even though they have their own family. Leaving your parents, cleaving to your spouse certainly changes your priorities because now it's that new family, that new nuclear family is your priority. But that does not negate the obligation you have to honor your parents even though you have a wife and kids or a husband and kids yourself. You still need to honor them. Your manner of speech, your actions toward them need to demonstrate that. So do that, and in doing so, you actually end up teaching your own children how to honor you too. So it acts as a blessing to yourself. And then last week, I covered the areas of responsibility in the family towards siblings, your brothers and sisters. I mentioned that all the principles we discussed earlier regarding friendship apply there because siblings should become close friends as they get older. Obviously, age difference, sex differences make it difficult. Or young, I didn't have a sister, but I can guarantee you, as a little boy, I would not want to play with her dolls. Period. I'm sorry, wouldn't do it. G.I. Joe's came up when I was a little older, and I couldn't understand my cousin playing with a doll, even if it was dressed like a soldier. So that makes it a little harder. But you know, as you get older, those things change. And you should grow closer to each other, even with age differences. You, as the parent, set that up. You are the one who's going to foster that. So all the principles of friendship do apply there. Some things that you have to make sure don't happen in your family. Do not let sibling rivalry develop. You need to put a squash to that as soon as it does. That means, first of all, you cannot show partiality or favoritism to your children. Now, you can't treat them the same because each of your children are unique. They have their unique character traits, their strengths, their weaknesses, what their personality is like, what they can do, what they can't, dexterity, even their fingers. That's all different. So you can't treat them the same, but you have to treat them with equity. You need to know what they need and give what is needed to them properly without showing favoritism to somebody else. So if they need encouragement, you encourage them. If they need correction, you correct them. Whatever it is needed, that's what you're doing for your children. Also, be careful of the outside influences. We mentioned this last week. those things that will create and feed jealousy and envy. You need to eliminate them or at least reduce them until they can handle it. Those would include things, not only friends, that's certainly an obvious outside influence in your family, but what your children are getting into. What are they reading? What kind of books? What kind of magazines? What are they getting off the internet? What kind of music are they listening to? What kind of entertainment is influencing them towards what they think life is supposed to be about? A lot of foolish ideas come in through that. Be very careful. You want to teach your children to be and desire to be the first resource in trouble for their siblings. Proverbs 17:17 states, a friend loves at all times, but a brother is born for adversity. When those troubles come, it's those family members that are the ones that should be there to help. They're the first resource, and you should want to do that for your siblings. And siblings actually do have that. And it goes beyond just words of encouragement, comfort, admonishment is needed, but to the extent of physical help is needed. So develop these character traits in your children for friendship so they develop it. So it will continue on through the rest of their lives. Those character traits we talked about, friendship, humility and love, loyalty, confidentiality, honesty. Teach your children to be friends. Now the final area of family responsibilities I want to cover is the responsibility to the extended family. Now there are very few verses that deal with this directly, but there are a lot of examples, there's a lot of principles that still enable us to develop an understanding of our responsibilities before God to our extended family. That includes grandparents and the various aunts and uncles as well as cousins in previous, concurrent, and following generations. All right? You might say, these are all the people that would be invited to your family reunion, whoever that may be. That might be an easy way to describe it. Now, that may not be so important or seem so important to those with small families, but it still is important to you as it is for those with large families because these principles still should be applied. Let's start with grandparents. We are to honor them in the same way we'd honor our parents, except more so because their age also signifies they should have honor. You greet them with respect. You give them seats of honor. You serve them first. You pay attention to them. Try to recognize the days that are important to them. If you need to, provide for their material needs if that becomes necessary. 1 Timothy 5:4 specifically mentions children and grandchildren as having a first responsibility towards widows. So it's specifically mentioned there. But the responsibility, I will mention for those who are in the grandparent stage or getting close to it, goes the other way too. There's an interesting Proverbs 13:22. It says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. The wealth of a sinner is stored up for the righteous. An inheritance for his children's children. That's his grandchildren. And the man that is able to do that gives a double inheritance. And what do I mean by that? Well, certainly there's any material goods that's part of the estate. But something more important is all the character traits he had to have in order to gain that estate. Things like hard work, self-control, wise planning. Without those things, you can't get an estate because you'll spend it all. So if you can do that, you're giving a legacy to your grandchildren as well. So there's a double blessing there. What about other relatives? Well, those that are older should receive the honor that is due to their age. Again, we go back to Leviticus 19:32. You shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged. You shall revere your God, I am the Lord. They're tied together there. There is respect that should go there simply because they are the previous generation. So that includes your parents and your grandparents as well as their brothers and sisters. So that's your aunts and uncles and great aunts and uncles too, right? Their age says you should give them respect. Now it also include cousins. That would be your second and third cousins, if I get that right. It gets confusing sometimes. When I was spent a summer when I was 16 in Mississippi, I figured if they came up to the door of my grandmother's house where I was staying that summer and they did not buy fish bait, they were a relative. And pretty much it was. It might be fourth, fifth cousin of some sort, but my grandmother would know what the ties of the relation were. So I just figured I was a relationship to everybody in Jasper County. Unless they went fishing, I guess. you have responsibilities. Show that kind of respect to those that are older first. But what about those relatives, those cousins that are your own age group? Well, there's not the obligation to give them honor as those who are older, nor are there obligations that you would have towards siblings. But yet there is still a greater obligation to all your relatives, including the aunts and the uncles, the cousins, than there is to the general population. And this comes from this idea of kinsmen we find in the Old Testament. In Numbers 27:11, we find there's a sequencing of who is the nearest kinsman, the closest relative, of who's going to receive the inheritance, or who would receive restitution, if restitution was owed to the estate, who would receive that, who had the right to redeem the land, because it might be sold within the family. A family member has the right to redeem it. In the book of Ruth, it demonstrates that the redemption of the land also included the obligation to care for a childless widow. And Boaz did that for Ruth, and that's what's such a beautiful story. Our own laws still follow this. If there's not a will, there is sequencing of closest kin, right? And we have the judge who does that, right? Sitting right there. He can explain all that. You could probably explain who these kin are. I'm still not sure who they are. Who are the next of kin? Sometimes it seems like everybody. But it's there. You have an obligation. We also see in scriptures a pattern for the care of extended family. For example, Abraham, when his nephew Lot and his family had been captured by the kings in a war and been hauled off as booty, Abraham got together his household and all those working for him and formed an army and went up and did what? He beat the other kings in order to rescue his nephew. He had an obligation, and he sought out to fulfill it. Joseph ends up providing not only for his father and his brothers, but all of his nieces and nephews too in Egypt, doesn't he? That's in Genesis 45, 47, 50. We find that there's an obligation from when it doesn't get fulfilled. In Job chapter 19, verse 14, one of his complaints is his relatives had failed him in his suffering. That was one of his complaints. Where are my relatives? David had a similar complaint in Psalm 38:11. And based on that pattern, we find that Paul says this in Galatians chapter 6, verse 10. Galatians 6:10. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are the household of faith. Why does he use the term household there? Because he's going back to these family obligations. There is a household. There's a kinship. Our first obligation is there. So that obligation is not as great as to your immediate family, but it is greater than the general population. The same thing is true as a church family. We have a greater obligation to each other than to the general population. Now, the depth of family loyalty is going to vary from culture to culture and family to family. I understand that. Where it is strong, there is going to be care for one another and usually the neighbors too, because it spills over. I actually saw that when Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, it actually hit Mississippi. News media almost made it sound like it must have hit New Orleans square on. It didn't. It sideswiped New Orleans. It hit square on in Mississippi. That's where all my dad's side of the family is. They just took it in stride like any other disaster that happens, and since they're spread out over the state, those who are far enough away took care of those who lost their homes. They all chipped in and helped each other. You know, one had a trailer, and so one family lived in that for a long time, and they were sending money down to help them. And they helped their neighbors, too. Whatever needed to be done. Contrast that to where those kinds of family ties were not there, as has really been happening in the major cities where family ties are broken up, and they become independent families. And so New Orleans, what was happening where the family ties weren't strong? Someone has to come rescue me. Well, who? We got to wait for some charity organization or government to do it because the family ties are broken. So there's serious consequences of this in a culture. Family ties go a long way. Now, there is a caution when it comes to this kind of strong family loyalty. It certainly results in help when it's needed, but you want to be careful of this one. If it is too strong to the point where it transcends everything else, you end up with battling clans. Here in the United States, especially of any kind of a Southern heritage, you've heard of the Hatfields and McCoys. Or if you read Shakespeare, you have the Montagues and the Capulets. All right? There's actually a case of this in Judges chapter 20. The worthless men of Gibeah, and this is a city in Benjamin's tribe, these are Benjamites, ended up raping and abusing a visitor's concubine, causing her to die. The relatives, the rest of the Benjamites, instead of siding with God and righteousness and bringing those who had committed the crime to justice, sought to defend them. The result? A civil war among the nation of Israel. Wrong family tie. Wrong loyalty. The primary loyalty of every Christian is first and foremost to God, and therefore obedience to his commands is more important than any family tie. There's the balance. So those are the responsibilities we have to family. What about responsibilities to society, this in general, all the folks out there? Well, you need to teach your children about this as well. This includes those who are in authority, those who are peers, and then society at large. How about authority? Start there. Now, as Christians, we start with the highest position of authority, which is who? It's God. That is our first priority. He's the highest authority. We then work down. So our allegiance is to God first, even if human authorities do not like it. Our first allegiance is there. If they persecute us, our first allegiance is still to God first. And recall, this is throughout the Scriptures, and it's still happening today. We saw it when we studied Daniel 3. Remember Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They refused to obey King Nebuchadnezzar's command to fall down and worship the golden idol. They were not going to disobey God, were they? And they did not, and so what happened? Got thrown in the fiery furnace. A couple chapters later, King Darius gets tricked into making this command. You can't pray to anybody except me for 30 days. Daniel doesn't pay any attention to it because that would mean disobeying God. He kept with his practice and prayed as he always had in the same manner he always had. The result? He's thrown in the den of lions. Now, in those two cases, God enacted the miracle and rescued them. But countless martyrs have not had that rescue. But they, like the apostles, Peter and the other apostles in Acts 5:29, proclaimed, we must obey God rather than man, and willingly paid the price, even if it meant their life. We start with that attitude. Our first allegiance is to God. Nothing else can interfere with that. But after that, then we certainly follow what God has told us to do. And that comes down to submitting to the various levels of human authority, as long as the commands given by them do not contradict God's commands, right? Because our first allegiance is to Him. Now, the biblical command, the principles are found in several places. Romans 13, 1 and 2. Probably one of the more clear passages. Romans 13. Paul explains, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. And they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. He then goes on to explain the purpose of government being a minister of God to bring praise to the righteous and fear to those who do evil. That's what makes legitimate government. And for those reasons, he says, render to all what is due them. Tax to whom is tax, custom who is custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom is honor. Titus 3:1, 1 Peter 2, 13 through 17 repeat the exact same thing. Same thing it's talking about. We are having this obligation because it is fulfilling an obligation to God first. He's established it. We're even to pray for them. 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 2 directs, first of all, then I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. That's our responsibility. And so we're to teach our children to show that kind of respect to every authority in word and in action. That includes government officials, police, fire officers, military officials when they're giving directions, school officials, teachers, instructors, coaches, church leaders, your boss at work. All these different authorities are there. You have to teach your children to respect them. That means they have to be courteous in their speech. They need to be compliant in their manner. And since those in authority are not peers, it generally also means use the title that the person has when you're addressing them. You know, it's officer, not copper, not popo, not whatever else is being used for our police officers. It's officer. If you're addressing a judge, it's your honor, right? Even though we do like the Three Stooges and, hey, judgy. He's not judgy. Your honor. It's proper addressing. You have never had anybody do that to you yet in court, have you?
I actually had a secretary refer to me as judgy
wudgy. That's your secretary. It's not the person you're about to...
It wasn't my secretary.
It was somebody else's. Oh, you're just waiting for them now to get in front of you. Oh, I'm judgy wudgy, eh? That's why you don't do it. You use it... The proper, sir, ma'am, miss, coach, whatever the title is, because it shows respect. Have your children do that. It actually does change your attitude. And they need to do that whether they're in the presence of the authority or not. That means you have to do that first at home yourself. Be careful of slang language, sarcasm, humor. All those have great potential of becoming disrespectful, and often are disrespectful even when we're trying to be careful. Your kids pick it up. Next thing you know, they're making statements that are very disrespectful, and then they're carrying that out when they are with these people. You teach them to have respect. Now, you can strongly disagree with an authority. In fact, as Psalm 15:4 states, you can even despise those that are reprobates. And we've got a lot of people in authority that are reprobates. There's no question about that. That's why we're trying to get rid of a couple of them. Again, if you want some signs to elect some people who are not the reprobates, I have some. I'll be happy to give them to you. But you still show respect for their position of authority because they have the position. Interesting, if you go through the Old Testament, you find there are all sorts of prophets who had to go and rebuke kings. And they did so with no holds barred. They were very direct and yet very respectful. They were still respectful to the office that was there and yet very pointed in the rebuke of them. That's the model we should be following. It's a little tough for us for in America because, let's face it, there's almost a cultural mandate that we have to be kind of disrespectful to those who got elected. Well, no, we should be respectful as they would be in other countries where they're not elected. They're there because they have the right of authority through lineage. They're kings that just inherit it. And they're more respectful than us? It's not a good point on American character. We want to follow the biblical example, not the cultural one. Now, what about it when those who are older or those in a superior position, those in authority, are disrespectful to you? We've all had that happen. They're nasty people. I had a phone message left on my phone Friday from someone who was very nasty. What do you do then? Well, 1 Timothy 4:12 gives us an answer. How do you deal with that? Paul told Timothy, "Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example to those who believe." In other words, when that happens, you prove that they're wrong by the demonstration of your character. Maybe they're in a position they're supposed to be immature and they're acting immature. Don't join them. You continue to respond with maturity even though you don't have a position or you're still young. Demonstrate it by your character. It serves as a rebuke to them and an encouragement to the other Christians to walk in the same way as you are. So that's authority. But what about peers? We give honor to those who are older. We give honor to those who are in authority. But what about peers? Those are the people who are the same age. They're in the same status as you are. They have the same abilities. No, you do not have to serve them first like you would an elder. And no, you don't have to obey their commands. But you are responsible still to treat them with courtesy and respect. Now, here's the difficulty in peer relationships. There's not a very well-defined leadership within it. And so it easily allows jealousy and rivalry to exist. Now, if there's a great age difference, the role is taken on by the older person. Actually, this is pretty pragmatic. If the other kid is a foot taller and 50 pounds heavier, there's not much question who makes the decision, is there? No. If you don't have grammar school kids challenging high school seniors, right? That doesn't happen. It's pragmatic in other areas. How about ability? Some of you I know have been involved in martial arts. Do white belts challenge black belts? No. It wouldn't be pretty if they did, would it? Employees will do what their employer says if for no other reason than they don't want to lose their job. Okay? That's pretty pragmatic. But what if it's two high school seniors, two black belts, and two employees with the exact same title? Well, now you've got a lot of room for jealousy and rivalry, and immature Christians can get caught up in that as much as anybody else. But as followers of Christ, we live differently. And we want to teach that way of life to our children. Following 1 Peter 5:5, we find that younger men subject themselves to their elders, and everyone is to be clothed with humility. Following the various Proverbs, we find that those who desire to be wise attach themselves to those who are wise, so they'll gain some wisdom. Following Colossians 3:23, we find that employees do their work heartily as unto the Lord, rather than for men, because it's the Lord Christ whom they serve, regardless of who signs the paycheck. Following Philippians 2:3-4, it's with humility of mind that we regard others as more important than ourselves, so that their interest takes precedent over our interests. And that applies directly to peers. And when it is applied, rivalry, jealousy, envy, it doesn't come up at all, or if it does come up, it's squashed very quickly. Just those principles. And those are very common for us as Christians. That's general principles for the way we live. We want to teach that to our children. Humility is the key in being able to fulfill your responsibility to others. In fact, it's the key to all relationships with all other people. Humility. You teach that to your children so that when they are the one who ends up and has developed the superior skills, or they end up in the position of authority, or they become the older one, then they will still deal with others properly and with respect. Those with greater ability should help those who have lesser ability. 1 Peter 4:10 gives us that principle. That's what we find in Scripture. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to demonstrate these principles in life. Those who are wise pass on their wisdom to those who want to learn. Again, we find that in Proverbs. The older generations pass to the younger generations what they have learned in praising the Lord and recounting the glories of what He has done. You find that throughout the Old Testament. Psalm 145:4 talks about that. One generation declaring the Lord to the next generation. Those in position of authority lead with humility instead of lording it over those who are under them. Jesus told us through that in Matthew 20 when He washed the disciples' feet. That was His point of His lesson. And so employers treat employees with justice and fairness because we also have a master in heaven, don't we? We have the same master. One can be an employee, one's the employer, but you have the same master. And you're both going to be held accountable to Him. Colossians 4:1, we talked about that when we were in Colossians last year. Now, it can take some hard work to rein in your child's natural selfishness and replace with humility and thoughtfulness, but it's work you need to do. It's normal for people to be self-centered so that when they are younger and they do not possess the skills or have the position of authority, they are going to complain about those who do. That's not respectful, is it? That needs to end. In pride and jealousy, they think they should be able to do what others can do, even if they're not ready for it yet. You often see this with younger siblings thinking they should do what the older siblings do. And they forget that the older sibling was not allowed to do that at their age either. And yet, when these same ones grow up and they become older, they gain the skills, they're put in the position of authority, their pride now leads them to have disdain for those that are under them. That's why you need to have these things corrected while they're young. Instill in them also the joy of teaching others. Because what you want, again, is a responsible adult who has godly characteristics. So don't let your children complain and whine. Don't let them treat others with disrespect. That begins with correction of bad behavior while they're very young and expands to correction of bad attitudes as they get older. For young children, you have to gain control of the actions before you can gain control of the attitude. Require them to be courteous and polite. Our society is becoming less that way, but you be the anomaly. Have polite children. You'll get invited out more places that way too.
Amen.
Thank you, Randy. Teach them to willingly share and be kind to others while playing. Let me give you a tip on this one. First, make your children understand, make sure they understand, that all the toys in your home are available to anyone that comes over. They can play with the toys. That way, you can require them to share without violating their own sense of ownership. With a couple exceptions. Allow them to have a couple special toys. You know, maybe it's a stuffed animal or something like that, that they own. That is theirs. And they know that is theirs. No one else can do anything with it. That gives you the opportunity to teach them ownership responsibilities, and it gives you a window to know when you've really reached their heart, when they start sharing that toy. Because now that one's they're sharing because they want to, not because they have to. And that's why you're after. You're after the heart. So you've got to leave room there for that to happen, even while you're training them. So there's just a tip. What about responsibilities to the opposite sex? I want to address this area. Our society, in my view, has lost its sense of propriety when it comes to dealing with those of the opposite sex. I personally believe this is due to the influence of feminism. It's one of the many means by which the devil has attacked the family and our society. And for all the clamoring about wanting equality between males and females, feminism has resulted in greater animosity, more disdain, more rudeness between the sexes, even while promoting the exploitation of women as sexual objects. There's not much feminine in feminism. And the influence of feminism has now been long enough, it has completely taken over some church denominations, and its tentacles certainly reach into the evangelical community as well. You need to stand guard against its influence in your own family and teach your children to be godly in their interaction, and that includes with those of the opposite sex. The Epistle of 1 Timothy gives us some very good helpful direction in this. It must be kept in mind that this letter written by Paul to Timothy regarding his responsibilities in Ephesus, Timothy was still young, and he'd been sent with Paul's authority as an apostle to give direction and set things in order in the church. So Paul is giving this young man directions on how to deal with the issues that are coming up in the church. Then in 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 through 3, he says this, "Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters, in all purity." Now, the immediate instruction was the manner in which Timothy was going to correct others. But in describing this, Paul also is giving direction in the manner of relationships he should have with all those in the church, including those of the opposite sex. Those who were a generation of older were to be treated as either a father or a mother. And that ends up bringing into the idea or invoking the honor, the respect that is due to parents. That's how he wanted them to treat them in the church. It would also imply that those of the older generation should treat those of the younger generation as sons and daughters. In other words, they're going to be looking out for their welfare and striving to find opportunities to teach them the wisdom they've learned over the years. So it is a two-way street. Then he goes on to say that the younger men are to be treated as brothers and the younger women as sisters. And that suggests taking on these responsibilities I spoke about last week as siblings. Regard them that way. Now, the term younger here is relative to the term older men and women that are treated as fathers and mothers, it does not refer to Timothy's specific age as a point. Those older than this point and those younger. There's the older generation and those that are younger than the older generation. So this actually is Timothy's peers as well as those younger than Timothy. Now, since Timothy is a single male, this includes how will he treat all those potential females that could possibly become a wife? How will he treat them? And notice that Paul specifically adds here, treat them as sisters in all purity. And we know that Timothy was a normal young man because in 2 Timothy 2:22, Paul told him, now flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Timothy was a normal red-blooded male. You single men and women need to take seriously these thoughts, these ideas, these precepts, these principles to heart. Our society is pushing you to place a premium on having a romantic relationship. And it seems like it keeps pushing it younger and younger and younger. Not just high school, but you should have a boyfriend by the time you're in junior high, or maybe even grammar school. And it all seems so wonderful until you find your heart is broken because the relationship you got into was exploitive. And you end up walking away feeling used instead of cherished. The Bible places an emphasis very different than our society. Our society wants you to place an emphasis on feelings. Find someone that sparks your emotions. Scripture directs you to look for someone who's going to be able to walk with you as you walk with the Lord. Someone you're going to be serving the Lord alongside with. Your partners together in glorifying His name. Someone with whom that your relationship together is a picture of Christ and the church. We talked about that when we were dealing with marriage. Ephesians 5:32. So you need to learn to how to cherish some person long before romance and marriage enter the picture. You single men need to treat the single women as sisters in all purity. Do not fall for the lustful romantic dating trap promoted by our society. And I think that's the best way I can describe it. A lustful romantic dating trap. Do not play with her heart. And too many guys are doing exactly that. Until you propose marriage and have given her a ring and have set a date, you have absolutely no claim on her. Do you understand that? So don't treat her like you do. You don't. And until she is given away and you both have said, I do, at the altar, she is not yours, so hands off. Got it? Now, ladies, the principle goes to you as well. You treat the single men as brothers in all purity. Yes, I understand. You'd like to make yourself available because you would like to get married. You need to be available for such a relationship. I understand that. You'd be very careful how you, shall we say, publicize it, because you're going to get the kind of man you're advertising for. Does that make sense to you? So your manner of dress, your flirtations, your manner of speech, what you show interest in, are all advertisements saying, that's the kind of man I want. So you be very careful there. And parents, you have the responsibility of directing them in all this. Now, why am I being hard on this? Well, it's not just because my sons are now up in that age, so I'm more aware of it. And I am. But it's what I've been seeing in society for a long time. Diane and I got married, we were both 29. We're both virgins, which seemed odd even then. We know it's really odd now. And we were involved with single ministries for over 10 years. We've dealt with this for a long, long time. It's getting worse and worse and worse because our society is declining. So if you're going to stand firm against it, you have to have this firmly in mind that I'm going to serve God first and walk with him in holiness. Because that's the issue. It's not about your happiness. It's about your holiness. Because that's for eternity. Your happiness is like that and it's over. Some of you had a really great day yesterday and enjoyed playing games. And today you're not so happy about it because there are body parts that are saying, why did you do that to me? Okay? That's happiness. It's fleeting. It's over. Pursue holiness. So parents, you teach your children about relationships with the opposite sex by your own example. What you try to teach them, as well as what you allow to influence them. That includes, what do you allow them to discover themselves by their own experiences and their own study? What are they getting from their friends? What are their entertainment choices? Because those things can easily outweigh your own example of what you think you've taught them. Be diligent. Teach them about God, his ways, protect them from the evil society while training them to stand firm and live righteously in the midst of a very crooked and perverse generation and one that's getting worse. If you do not, then do not be surprised when they are overwhelmed by society and they are conformed to the image of this world instead of the image of Christ. Proverbs 13:20, I think, gives a fitting conclusion. He who walks with wise men will be wise. The companion of fools will suffer harm. Walk with those who are wise. Stay away from those that would lead you into foolishness.